Hello and welcome to our final episode. My name is Jan-Kier Lange and you're listening to Talking Progress, a podcast by das Progressive Zentrum. This podcast explores new ideas for social progress in Germany, Europe and transatlantic spaces. Today you're listening to our transatlantic series on the industrial heartlands and their just transition. This podcast is part of our project called Transatlantic Dialogue on the Industrial Heartlands, Shaping the Future. It's a collaborative effort led by das Progressive Zentrum, working alongside our dear partners at the Progressive Policy Institute, Georgetown University's BMW Center for German and European Studies, and the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. The industrial heartlands of the US and Germany are at a critical crossroads. These former centers of production have become the front lines for economic upheaval and the rise of nationalist movements. Our project stepped into this gap, building a resilient network of regional experts to champion local, green and democratic solutions. While these regions often slip off the national radar, they remain the decisive arenas where the future of democracy is being fought. The lasting legacy of our work is a permanent connection between leaders and experts that will endure long after the project ends. At our closing conference in December 2025, titled Heartlands, Navigating Rearmament, Recarbonization and Realignment, we also explored a vital piece of this puzzle, the role of subnational diplomacy in shaping the future of transatlantic relations. Think back to 3 years ago, when this project launched, we were living through a moment of remarkable unity. The US and Europe stood shoulder to shoulder in solidarity with Ukraine, and we were determined to channel that momentum into real place-based policies for the industrial heartlands. We were hopeful, we were aligned. But as we have reached the end of our project, the geopolitical landscape has shifted dramatically. The language coming out of Washington has moved from calling Europe an ally to a partner, and now, under the latest national security strategy, it feels like we are being treated as an outright competitor. In our final episode, we are pushing past the headlines. Beyond the negative press and the geopolitical friction, we are putting the spotlight on the path forward. How do we keep building strong transatlantic relations when the official ties are fraying? And how can subnational diplomacy and transnational initiatives on the local and regional level offer a new way ahead? At the second panel of our closing conference, revolving around the future of transatlantic relations, we welcomed two distinguished experts and practitioners from the US, Nina Hashigian and John Austin, who talked with us about their transition strategies. John Austin is a senior fellow in the Eisenhower Institute at Gettysburg College, a non-resident senior fellow at Brookings Institution, and also a member of our project consortium. In these roles, he has been the author of some of the most influential analysis of the politics and economics of industrial heartlands, as well as tangible guides and guidance for policymakers around constructive action and change. Nina Hashigian, on the other hand, is the founder of Allies, a platform connecting cities and leaders to advance global cooperation. Until 2024, she was the US Special Representative for City and State Diplomacy, coordinating international engagement for US local and state governments. As national governments face unprecedented tension and geopolitical realignment, a new vanguard of transatlantic cooperation is emerging at the local level. This discussion explores how cities and industrial heartlands are stepping up to preserve democratic values, drive innovation, and tackle shared challenges like climate change and AI. By shifting the focus to subnational leaders, the conversation reveals a resilient framework for a global economic opportunity order, anchored in community-led vision and shared prosperity. Enjoy listening to this exchange, moderated by Florian Rampft, member of the Management Board and Head of Green New Deal at das Progressive Zentrum.
Great to have you both with us. Nina, I want to come to you first to give us your perspective, your view on what we can do going forward in building lasting relationships in the transatlantic space.
Thank you, Florian. And it's exciting to be here with fellow travelers. This, I've heard about this project for a while, and it just, I'm really appreciative of it, impressed with it, and I think everyone seems to have gotten a lot out of it. So, yeah. So I'm Nina Hachigian, and I used to work as the first special representative for city and state diplomacy, and but I'm here today representing my new nonprofit called Allies. So we work to connect cities and regions around the world to exchange ideas and solutions and solidarity on shared challenges such as AI, pandemics, governance, climate change. You just heard this amazing panel of local leaders from the United States and Germany describe their engagement that is driving innovation and renewal. These mayors described how they're supporting transatlantic ties, and I'd like to share why I expect this subnational collaboration to grow and become increasingly essential to maintaining the strength of the transatlantic relationship. As you've already discussed, transatlantic relations at the national level are in trouble. In the past year, we've seen unprecedented and unpredictable US tariffs disrupt trade and supply chains. We've seen heightened tension and uncertainty within NATO and around our support for Ukraine and its valiant fight to defend itself against Russia and the US retreat from its traditional security posture. And I think the first alarm bell, or the loud alarm bell, was we heard when Vice President Vance made remarks in Munich last year. And as we now know, these threats are only growing darker and more urgent, and now they're codified, as you've discussed in the National Security Strategy released last week. It's quite shocking for someone who's been in international relations for as long as I have been that we are lecturing Europe about its civilizational erasure, and that it's our job to manage Europe's relationship with Russia. So all of this obviously threaten the health of our ties of family and friendship, the innovation and renewal that they foster, the jobs that they create in all of our communities, and the democratic values and liberties that make the foundation of our partnership. So now it's on us, the cities and regions. We can add to it the list of other things that we are responsible for: climate action, women's empowerment, racial equity, pluralism, transparency. These are all now on the shoulders of city and county and state and regional leaders to take forward. But we can do it. More than half the world's population lives in cities. We are where most GDP is produced, most private sector jobs are created, and that number is only growing. So local leaders, and particularly mayors, are most connected to their constituents. Surveys always show that they're the most trusted. And as we have seen recently in New York, mayoral campaigns can energize large block voters. When it comes to regions historically underrepresented in the central level, such as the heartland, local leaders are the ones who are best situated to advocate for them. So we can talk further about, what I think we need to do, but I think it's clearly now on the local elected leaders to take this relationship forward.
Thank you, Nina. Before I turn to John, Nina, just one quick follow-up question. I mean, you've been right in the center ground on building relations city to city at the multilateral stage. Where do you see kind of momentum and space, maybe innovation to strengthen and kind of build new relations at the moment? Is it with civil society actors? Is it with local leaders? Where do you see maybe some hope that we can all build on?
When I'm with groups of local leaders, I feel a lot of hope. I know that's the case in the United States, that there are an increasing number of organizations and people who are focused at the state and local level, understanding now that this is the place where they can actually support efforts to move the ball forward in some way. Subnational foreign policy used to be a little like side niche that like me and like four other people were interested in for some time. And it's really grown. And that's, I feel like, quite encouraging. And that's, and then you heard Steve Patterson, like, I think it's mayors and governors are realizing they need to preserve these relationships that are creating jobs and are creating culture in their communities. They feel, I think, more responsible than in the past. So, and then, like Allies is going to host in Munich, I think the first ever panel of mayors, at the Munich Security Conference. So I think, and I know we've gotten a lot of interest by American mayors about how to develop their international engagement strategies. They may have been interested before, but now they actually want to figure out how, what to do. Obviously, the climate space has a lot of long-standing collaboration internationally, and those ties are something that is possible to build on to, for other purposes as well. So, anyway, we're really happy to help. You can always reach us at info@allies.net, but I am actually hopeful.
Excellent. Thank you, Nina. So we need to grow and scale up the existing cooperation and relationships and build on that. And there couldn't be anyone more suitable to follow up on this because, John, you've built and formed so many relations across the Atlantic. You've recently spent time in Bonn as a fellow there at the North Rhine-Westphalia International School, and once in a while, I get an impression you're already speaking like a European rather than someone from the US, especially because you've put a lot of thought into the issues of the Europe's strategic autonomy and how this relates to a robust transatlantic cooperation amid the United States' geopolitical realignment. John, what are your thoughts on how can we strengthen the relations going forward?
Happy to be with you, and I'm eager to share my encouragements and recommendations on that score. First, yeah, I'm back after 6 months in Europe and Germany, firmly ensconced here in the industrial heartland. Just down the street here in Lansing, Michigan, is that image that's behind me, which is where Ransom Olds, later of Oldsmobile founder, invented the mass production auto assembly line before Henry Ford. And there's a giant GM factory behind that power plant that was built in 1930 to begin to service this industry. But I also am happy to sort of be back and able to keep working together with this partnership that we've been building. And I would say, if anything, seeing the fellows, congratulating the fellows, seeing all of you on the meeting is not only encouraging, but there's tremendous momentum and there's tremendous purposeful work that all of you are doing around the things that we created these initiatives, including the Heartland Transformation Network, which will continue to share lessons, insights, and provide moral support and encouragement to leaders across both sides of the Atlantic to accelerate economic opportunity building for people that aren't feeling it naturally. And it can be a big continuing contribution to healing our politics. Like Steve Patterson, the mayor, it was great to be on the trip with you, Steve. I, as an American, I'm pained by an administration that is animating values which are absolutely antithetical to what most Americans and certainly this American feel we are about. I think we will be back, and we will be back playing the constructive leadership role in the world that we need to play on democracy building and economy building with our friends and allies. But we may have lost for good certain things like the trust. I felt it in Europe, the trust that we wouldn't turn bad again, and also the admiration of Europe and Germans. You know, that was, I relate back to people here. What do people think about? They're sad. Germans admired the US for this inspiring role of building democracy, building freedom, encouraging others to find their future and supporting them. Now, that said, yeah, don't pay too much attention, though it's hard. This national security strategy just came out, you know, very rarely, only with like NSC 68 that framed containment after the Cold and built the Cold War. Do these strategies have any real impact or purpose? Certainly, this administration has no strategy, except they'd like to goad Europe and get Europe's goat and make Europe react. And I really want my main message in terms of what we need to do. Europe, take heart and confidence. You collectively, the EU is got a GDP and an economy that is way bigger than China and roughly on par just behind the US's economy. And if you work together with allies who want to continue to strengthen a collective family of nations that respect rules and freedoms and rights and open trade, work with the UK, work with Canada, work with Asia, work with the developing world, you have the collective strength to build your own robust economy and to push back against authoritarians, which I'm pained to note include temporarily, I hope, my own country. And the way we will change and reject Trump is already beginning to happen. When people are hurting economically, when the cost of living is going up, not down, you know, Trump has managed to do in 1 year, witness his falling approval ratings below 40%, including on the economy. He's 30 points underwater on the things that he promised to make life better, to lower prices and build a better economy for those on the margins who took a chance on him and put him back in office. He's done in 1 year what it took Viktor Orban to do in 10 years of kleptocracy and disabling government services, to basically have the public turn on him and say, no, we want government to work for us, deliver education, healthcare, and a decent standard of living where we have a chance. And that's all beginning to undermine. So Europe can help by continuing to put pressure on and punish the US economically, because that's the way it's already beginning to turn, where the public here is turning on Trump and is looking for any excuse. Witness the elections a month ago to vote Republicans out of office, who are clearly complicit in enabling him. There's no uncertainty about that anymore. You know, don't try not to kowtow to the US. It's painful to me to see nations kiss his ring, you know, give him a few golf clubs, and be polite, but then go quietly to build a stronger collective economic family of nations. So my three recommendations to Europe are: one, yes, lead the building of this, what I'm calling a global economic opportunity order. As I said, if you work with the rest of the freedom-loving, rights-respecting, rules-respecting nations, Australia, Canada, Mexico, Asia, Singapore, South Korea, you have a way bigger economy. Join and lead the future of investment and trade partnership. These are nations like Singapore and Norway that have banded together saying, we want to continue an open, rules-based, rights-respecting, freedom-loving order. You've got to engage and offer a better option of development that's growth oriented, that's freedom respecting to the developing world. Don't think you have to accept China's rules. China does not respect civil rights, human rights, and you don't need to kowtow to China either. You need to be not naive about China is eager to remake a global order so that authoritarians who don't have any respect for human rights don't really believe in sustainable solutions. You know, they're trying to rewire the sustainable development goals to not leave any individual behind, which is what Europe and Germany and the rest of us have been pushing for. They don't want to leave any country behind because they don't want anyone meddling in how you can basically punish and not respect civil rights and human rights in any country. That's not acceptable, should not never be acceptable. So to build your own high-tech economy, this is something we're trying to actively support. Europe needs growth. Germany needs growth. You have to get good, as we have demonstrated we are, at building the dynamic new high growth startups, disruptive technologies that change the economic game and also so you're not being subject to blackmail by our high-tech oligarchs who, as we speak, want access to Europe on their terms, not play by your rules, don't cave in, insist that you play, but that is contingent. You need high-tech, your own high-tech for your own defense. It's essential. And you'll never be able to defend yourself until you build your own high-tech industry. And there's lots going on that shows you can in Europe, but we all need to work together to help. We may have a side event at the Munich on this topic. How do we all help Europe build finally a high-growth, high-tech economy? Number three, keep focusing on industrial heartland regions, but also link the current needs and agenda like rearmament and view it as a good. If Europe rearms, it's going to build out its defense industrial complex in regions where they have the infrastructure and muster to do that. That's a good thing. I'm going to encourage my fellows tomorrow to don't view these things as negatives. Turn them into positives, rearmament, recarbonization. Because if we don't bring in our countries economic hope and opportunity to people that aren't finding it naturally, they will keep being responsive to the agents of anti-democratic ethno-nationalists. So we have to keep on that score, and I appreciate everybody joining today to talk about how we do that.
Excellent. Thank you, John. As always, to the point and with plenty of recommendations for European leaders and policymakers. I want to get back to you. There's a question asking whether there might be some momentum to reinvigorate maybe better sister twin partner city initiatives of the past decades around the theme of heartlands, climate, post-industrial and left behind places. And I was going to ask both of you actually, what would be, I mean, we've talked a lot about climate. Friedrich and Colleen at the very beginning set the scene with their policy recommendations, knitting and connecting kind of the places and the identity of places and the issues of belonging. With civic engagement and civil society, with a more kind of stronger innovation orientated economy. So, what in your view are potential kind of themes and topics for local and city leaders in the US and Europe to keep cooperating and to keep the transatlantic spirit alive? John, may I get back to you first, and then Nina.
Yeah, though I was eager to defer to Nina, but two things. One, on important urgent tasks that we need to continue to advance on, like ameliorating climate change, reminding each other, as I think was noted by all of our mayors, but the reality, America, which is the problem child now under our national leadership, but also, as you know, there's been some walk back in Germany and Europe from are we going to grow green as aggressively or not? Is the two-thirds of our economy in the US, and it's probably akin to in Europe, is controlled by two-thirds of our economy, the real economy, is controlled by mayors and governors in geographies that are committed and will stay committed to climate change amelioration and going green. That's the overwhelming share of our net product and our net economy. So if those mayors and governors work together with peers in Baden-Württemberg and North Rhine-Westphalia and elsewhere, they can continue this course. And as was talked about today, learn from each other about how to do this work well and share and steal approaches. And then the collective effort is going to trump, just like it did under Trump one, whatever Trump decides to do to leave Paris. No, the bulk of the US economy is saying, no, we're not leaving Paris. We're staying in Paris. Two, I thought the recommendations of some of the fellows papers around where we can engage on the subnational level were exactly right. Key to all of this is building the own locally driven, locally owned strategic plans and visions that are empowering and authored by the community. It's not the particular topic about are we going to go green? Are we going to build innovation infrastructures? Are we going to build infrastructure? Are we going to educate everybody? It's what is the way we get our community making an effective vision that's their vision whatever that may be, building whatever the assets they had. That's the key ingredient that we need to help communities share and nurture.
Thank you, John. Nina, which themes and topics should we focus on going forward?
Just building on what John said, his last comment there. So how you do that public engagement, I think, is really interesting. There's lots of experiments around the world and how you do that in like participatory budgeting and, you know, various like tech platforms that allow more people to have a role in what you might call deliberative democracy. So the sharing of how you actually do that well, I'd say, would be a topic. Another one would be engaging young people in your community. Like, what are effective ways that mayors and governors have done that, or, you know, in Europe and in the United States, and can we learn from each other about that? Another one would be AI and the use of the regulation of AI, but also the use of AI within government in a safe way that brings along workers and that you know, is used not just for you know, that when it's public facing is actually also an instrument of civic education and of values reflection. So I'd say that's another topic that I think would benefit by a transatlantic conversation.
In an era of national level friction, subnational diplomacy has evolved from a niche interest into the essential anchor of the transatlantic relationship. The core takeaway is clear. Cities and regions are now the primary guardians of a global order built on rules, rights, and subnational resilience. As we look toward the future of transatlantic relations, staying stronger together is the only way to counteract the uncertainty of shifting national administrations. This project was built on the mission of empowering a new generation of young leaders to have a definite voice in this discourse, ensuring that the heartlands in both the US and Europe are no longer a bystander, but a central driver of innovation and opportunity. The road ahead requires us to grow this network of subnational allies, nurturing the ties that national politics cannot break. By providing fresh perspectives and tangible economic opportunities to our regions, we keep the transatlantic channels open. Thank you very much for listening to our podcast, Talking Progress, the podcast that explores progressive ideas for Germany, Europe, and transatlantic spaces. This was the final episode of our series. While this chapter concludes, our mission remains steadfast, ensuring that no community is overlooked, and that the industrial heartlands and soon to be left behind regions remain the beating heart of a resilient and inclusive transatlantic future. This podcast is produced in the context of the Transatlantic Dialogue on the Industrial Heartlands project, a project by das Progressive Zentrum and distinguished partners at the Progressive Policy Institute, Georgetown University's BMW Center for German European Studies, and the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and with the support of the German Federal Ministry for Economic Affairs and Climate Action. For more information, please visit our website at industrial-heartlands.com or check the link in our show notes.